Hello and welcome to Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Sherry Saidi, founder and CEO of Versewire. Sherry says that Versewire is an alternative to record labels or, as she puts it, a venture capital model alternative for signing musicians. We ask her why Sherry believes it is the future of music in just 1 minute. Now, each Music Ally Focus episode, just like this one, analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time, just like this one. And so this podcast is also going to be quick. It should take about the same amount of time in which Mago Dennis could insert 450 power drill bits into his nose. That's a hypothetical figure, of course, because Mago was able to insert 16 into his nose in 1 minute in 2022, bettering his previous record by 6. Now, talking of having a nose for things, Versewire is not the first music business that Sherry Saidi has founded. She's also co-founder of the ticketing and live streaming platform Veeps, which took major investment from Live Nation a few years ago. And Sherry talks with the passion and the language of a tech founder. She thinks that the model behind Versewire will have a major disruptive effect on the long-standing and traditional record label model. It's a big statement, so we ask her to explain how. Let's go over to Sherry right now. Hello, Sherry.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Before we dig into what you're doing at Versewire, can you just give us a bit of context around that, who you are, what your background is, and what you're doing at Versewire, please?
Of course, of course. You know, I've actually been in the music industry for half my life at this point. I've been in it since 16. I started out as artist management, and of course, at the very beginning, I don't know what I was doing. Yeah. And I figured it out, and you know, I was on Warped Tour for about 8 years straight. I kind of did those types of artists, the more pop rock types of artists, if you will, and I loved it. I loved it so much, and I got to the point where I was like, okay, I want to help a lot of artists, but given my current bandwidth and what management really takes, I couldn't take on more than 7 artists at a time. I wanted to help thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. And I knew in order to do that, I had to think of like a more global idea, global solution for artists rather than taking on management clients. And my first aha moment was a company that you may know by the name of Veeps. That was actually something that I founded with Benji and Joel Madden from Good Charlotte. And it was meant to be a solution for democratizing ticketing, right? Because I've always said, look, if you don't like the way something is, you got 2 options. Try and fix it or stop complaining. That's really it. And so I've been under the notion, I'm like, no, I'm going to fix it. And I just thought the ticketing model could be greatly improved. And I wanted to give power back to the artists. I wanted it to be commission free. I wanted them to have control over their own ticketing business. And I'm very honored to say that we launched in 2018. We did a massive pivot during COVID to live streaming.
Yes.
From physical ticketing to live streaming ticketing. And we offer both now. But I'm very honored to say that after just 2 years, we sold at a $30 million valuation to Live Nation. So right. Now when I said I have a good idea, people took me seriously.
Okay. So let's talk about that good idea, which is Versewire.
Yeah, absolutely. So Versewire was basically one of those situations where I'm like, okay, I'm so proud of what we did here, but I didn't want to stop there. I was like, the Veeps of the world, these incredible ancillary income solutions for artists are only putting a Band-Aid on the root of the issue. And the root of the issue is the record label, traditional record label deals that artists fall into. And then I, of course, was like, haha, let's do this all over again. And Versewire was born out of necessity. Versewire was born out of something that I feel like we have needed for, you know, since the inception of record label deals. And I'm honored that we've figured out a model that works for all parties. It's basically, think of Shark Tank, right? Think of every other business in this entire world. When they want to elevate, they look for example, venture capitalists or investors. They get investment and then they get their team to help them build out their business and expand. So why are we doing it any differently? You know, we immediately, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows this, but like artists sign off their rights right off the bat. They don't own any of their music. They're recouping from their probably 15, 20%. So if they get an advance, which is a high interest loan, let's be honest, they have to recoup that advance from they're 15%, which means that if you get like a $100,000 advance, you actually have to make back $700,000 before you see the dime. So I was like, nope, we're going to literally treat this like a VC. And this is why I don't like calling Firstwire a label, because it's like calling an Uber a better taxi. It's not.
Yeah, you've called it a venture capital, I'm quoting you here, a venture capital model alternative assigning musicians. Which, you know, a label is obviously a snappier word, but let's make that differentiation, because this is the key to it, isn't it? You've just explained it in sort of very simple terms there, but how does it work in that sense then? If it doesn't work like a label, it works more like a venture capital investment. So how does it work? And can you explain it as you pitch it to artists?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, basically the way that it works is we treat artists like the CEOs of their own business. So if I'm treating an artist, like just think of Shark Tank, if anyone on this, if any listeners have watched the show before, they go up and they say they need this much for this much equity of their company. A shark agrees, and then they bring in their team to help them. We pretty much do the exact same thing. We go, okay, when we don't tap into all revenue streams, it's just really, it's case by case because every business is different, but it's mostly the masters. But we say, okay, we think you need this much to make an album. We think you need this much to make marketing. We'll invest in that. We'll take equity of certain revenue streams, minority equity, because the artist always owns the lion's share because the artist owns their work. And then we bring in our label services team to run pretty much their label services side of the business. So that involves distro, marketing, social content, playlisting, radio, international radio, sync, PR. All of that is given to you at the very beginning. It isn't something that you have to earn because you had a viral moment. It isn't something that you have to like work up to, because that's true artist development. So the main differentiators between Versewire and a traditional label is that we literally treat artists like we're the VC. We're the VC that has the whole team you need to elevate and develop your business.
Okay, so that does sound kind of different in that sense, doesn't it? I mean, my first two questions are then, so the artist pitches to you and says, I want investment to do this. Do they, I can imagine that being a little bit intimidating, not in this sort of TV pressure sense, but in the sense of the, like a lot of artists, one of the reasons historically they've perhaps gone to a label is because the label says, oh, well, just you give us your music, we'll take on all the kind of difficult responsibilities over here and you can forget about it. But then actually your model requires them to sort of come to you up front and sort of say, well, I'm looking to do this and I kind of need to put a figure on things like that. Is that something which is intimidating for artists?
They don't necessarily have to come to us with a number. Actually, like with our first signing, Beauty School Dropout, we found them because we wanted to go ahead and sign an emerging artist to prove the concept, not only from a financial standpoint, but also from a development standpoint. It's two ways. Like we're always looking for artists, whether they're emerging or established, but a lot of artists approach us. And these are significantly established artists that have actually been approaching us in the past year going like, you know what, we've gone through all the different label models and we want to come here. Like what would this look like for us? And then we will like sit and figure out the projections kind of together. Right. They don't have to come with us with a hard figure because it's really difficult. You know, that's not something that like our music industry has really done before. So I think it's kind of hard to put like a exact figure on it. But what we do is we treat it like a business. We treat it like, what's your valuation? What do we think you need to actually get this body of work out in the best way possible? What support do you need? And every business is different. Every artist is different. We create custom tailored resources. So for example, maybe one specific social content person will be better for this artist than this artist. Okay, this artist significantly does incredibly well on the writer producer side, but they need a lot of help, for example, in their songs are incredible. No one has pitched to sync before, so we're really going to double down there. It's all about looking and seeing where the holes of their business are and how we can just elevate it and actually develop those silos of their business.
So it's becoming kind of clear then that starting point is different. It's label services to an extent with a different perspective to build out that artist. And then the injection of money is different as well.
Very, very, because our investment isn't recoupable. Just the same way you get an investment from a VC, they don't go give it back right away. Our investment is non-recoupable. That's our investment. we're making an investment in artists, and we're giving them the entire team that they need to get to where they need to go.
You predicted my next question, which was who's on the hook for it. So thank you for that. what then, you know, if you're making, you know, in the VC world, investments are often made on, you know, data-driven points of they'll make projections for the future. Is, you know, what is that balance then when you're picking artists between, you know, looking at sort of solid data of like, well, you're getting this many streams, we project this many in 5 years, and we know that it will supply this much money back, and sort of pure A&R of sensing talent?
You know, it's such a great question, because this is something that we talk to our, you know, we have a great, amazing investors that are involved in the music industry. And then we have incredible investors that aren't involved in the music industry, but also, but just are huge supporters. And they ask this question all the time. They're like, how do you know who to sign? Is it purely just based on amount of streams? And it's such a combination, because someone, for example, can be a great streamer, but it doesn't necessarily mean they pull tickets, like in-person tickets. Someone can be an incredible artist in a sense of like their music theory and all that type of stuff, but it may not translate to the actual bodies of work being put out. It's one of those things where there's so many aspects. Like, is this an emerging artist or established artist? Because then the questions are going to be different. How long have they been doing this for? Who's their manager? Do they have a full team around them? Because then I can't tap into all of those and do it all. Like, we're on the label services side, quote unquote. Are they hungry? Are they ready to work? Do they write their own music? Do they produce their own music? Because we like artists that are very multifaceted. How involved are they in the creative? Do they expect us to kind of do everything? Are they really tapped in there and have a vision? And for us, like, there's just been so many different aspects of like just the overall attitude, how long they've been doing this for, and if they really know what it takes. If they're an established artist, are they still just as hungry? Are they ready to work? There's so many different aspects, because if you base it just on numbers, it's that may work for other business, for other industries, but for us, there's so much passion and emotion and just overall and relationships. There's so many different aspects to it that it's not purely numbers. Because, for example, with our first signing, Beauty School Dropout, if I base that off of numbers, I may have not picked them up, but I, you know, I saw something in their eyes. They were hungry. They knew what they were doing. Their stage presence was years beyond where I thought they should be. And I was like, okay, there's something here. And we were right.
And you're proven right. Yeah. So let's talk about that return on investment then. First of all, do you have a sort of an average number that you invest in each artist, or is there a range because it depends on where you're at?
Of course. No, I mean, here's the thing. Like, with the artist that we're actually onboarding, which I cannot wait to share with you, it's they're stadium-sized artists. It varies so much because, for example, an emerging artist, you also have to make sure that your return on investment, you need to have it at a certain level so that it makes sense, and that myself as a company, because this we're investing in it, like there's eventual profit at some point. And also the beauty of it is our first client has already started receiving royalty checks just 2 years into a year and a half into being signed by a label, which is unheard of, right? But then, for example, with bigger artists, they're used to different funds. The producers that they work with are used to like higher funds, which I understand, but they also make significantly more. Mm. So it's one of those things where it's a balancing act, but it's also you have, like with established artists, you have numbers that you can base it off of and just get an understanding of what types of budgets this artist is used to, but also what you feel like this is actually going to take, because you know, like a music video doesn't have to cost $1 million. Mm. It doesn't have to. You can also make a great music video for less. And so it's also just figuring out what makes sense. And then for an emerging artist, like, you have to just be a little bit more strategic with the funds, because you also want to grow and you want your artist to make money, and you can do both. I mean, with our first signing, when we signed them, they had a total of 4 million streams across all streaming platforms. They're now at 60 million. Mm. So the growth is important, but it's also important for that artist to like have money in their pockets to live. And it's just about just making it make sense between the different levels of artists we sign.
And what does your portfolio mix look like in terms of like your ambitions? Is it, you're talking about stadium size artists, you're talking about unknown, or not unknown, but like emerging artists who are being developed. So what is that? What does that mix look like?
Of course. Well, for now, right, we're sticking in terms of genre, we're sticking with pop rock. The viewers can't see me, but if you looked at me, you'd be like, duh, I'm covering.
I can confirm this.
Things and everything. So genre-wise, we're sticking there. But range-wise, like we started with an emerging artist because we had to, that was our case study. That was our proof of concept. Our next signing was Girlfriends, which is Travis Mills, T Mills, and Nick Gross. So that's more established. And then what actually ended up happening, our goal was to sign more established artists because growing an emerging artist is significantly harder than taking an existing fan base of an established artist and radaring out and engage and re-engaging with them, right? So like huge artists, which I'm honored to say, started contacting us and going, okay, we see what you're doing with artists at this size. We imagine what you could do with us. And so our goal is for this to be a house for all artists in like all different stages of their career. And it's nothing that basically there's nothing a major can do that we can't. We have the relationships. We have the infrastructure. If anything, you get top tier service because you're not one of, you know, 6,000 artists, for example, you're one of five. And right now, this isn't a volumes game for us. Right now, this is a get it right game for us. It's quality.
And just for clarification then, for listeners, you've already said that you don't take ownership of masters. For instance, the artist remains majority owner. Do you take some ownership of masters?
Yeah, we take a minority stake, and it's different for every single artist because they're going to be at different stages in their career. The deals are just going to be different for us. It's 100% case by case, but we just literally the same way. For example, if I tell you I own 51% of McDonald's, who owns McDonald's? I do. And everyone else is a stakeholder. Same thing. That's how we do it. You will always own at least 51% of your masters. And that's like at the lowest amount, right? And we're minority stakeholders. So you have your rights. So you can do whatever you want with your body of work. And that's our way of getting our ROI.
So when it comes to chat, you know, this is, you're pitching this as a new model. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the existing music industry, are you purely trying to disrupt labels, or are there other existing areas that you're trying to contest as well?
That's a great question. And to be honest with you, this is going to disrupt everything, right? Because if you think about it, the label model is at the very pinnacle and has a trickle-down effect to everyone within the music industry. The label deal that the artists assign affect the managers, affect the agents, affect the touring structure, affect the ancillary incomes the artist needs, which then breeds new businesses. It's going to disrupt everything, but in a very positive way, because we, for the longest time, have just assumed that, okay, well, artists don't make money off of their music, so go tour, tour, tour. That exhausts the artist. It's not even something that back when I was in management, I would even factor into like, you know, the yearly revenue, because we just wouldn't see checks, if ever. And this is going to disrupt everything in a very positive way. And I think timing is everything, right? Because if I gave you, do you like avocados?
I do, actually, okay. Yeah.
They're delicious, right? But if I gave them to you at the wrong time, you'd be like, this is disgusting. So timing is everything. And when Taylor Swift re-records her masters, because the biggest artist in the entire world didn't have ownership of her first seven albums, that signals to the industry something's happening. And also that fans for the first time are aware that artists don't own their own music. When huge artists, and you know, just out of respect, I don't want to name them, are leaving, like huge stadium-sized artists are leaving their label deals and staying independent, that's a signal saying something's about to change and something needs to change. And what we've created is we're like, look, you're the CEO of your own business. Here's your investment. It's not recoupable. That's our investment. Here is every silo of your industry that you, of your, of, like every silo, every department that you need to actually do what you need to do. And we're going to be very hands-on. We're not going to, you know, sign you and then just see what sticks on your own. That's not that, like every artist in every aspect of their career needs artist development. So if you're an established artist, guess what? Okay, now there's TikTok. What's your TikTok strategy? Do you have one? If you're an emerging artist, well, of course you need a ton of help. It's all about progressing. And so for us, it's going to affect every aspect of the business, but it's this has been a long time coming.
Is this scalable then in the sort of comparable way? We think about majors as being these enormous companies, like you say, with thousands and thousands of artists who are sort of waving their hands and saying, hey, what about me over here? Does this approach have like a natural limit? Like, if you're using the VC comparison, we see venture capital firms and maybe they've got investments in at any given time, even the really big ones, you know, a dozen, maybe a couple of dozen startups. So is it, are you looking at that kind of scale?
You know, 100%, but at this exact moment, we are just focused on just doing it right first. Mm. Because for example, I'm very honored to say we just raised $12.3 million. Do I have the funds to scale infinitely, right? To scale pretty rapidly right now? I do. I could sign 20, 30 artists and, you know, have my team figure it out, but that's not the point. The point is right now, we want to take these artists that are that were under service in their existing deals that, you know, have not received the level of artist development that they need in whatever capacity. And we're changing that. And for us, in order for us to continue to prove that this model is what the industry needs, we need to get it right first. Can I get to the point where I have a ton of team members that are handling 1,000 artists? Of course, not yet. You start like with the base and then you radar out from there. For me, with every artist that we sign, I just want to make sure that my team can handle it because the level of service is never going to change. And that is scalable because our model act like we've actually recouped from our first artist in terms of our investment. And that's not normal. But that's also why I tell people like, we're getting investment because people like I'm not getting investment because people like my hair. Like, you know, I'm getting investment because they lift the hood and they're like, wait a minute, like this model works. And I'm like, I told you. And, you know, it's so funny when I was first pitching the Beeps idea, like hand to God, there were so many people that were just like, well, this is too artist friendly. This isn't going to work. If it was going to work, someone would have done it already. And when I was like explaining the idea to Versebar to people, they said the same, like a few people said the same thing. And I knew that I was onto something right then and there. I was like, okay.
Right.
Thank you guys.
So I must jump in and say for clarity, Sherry does have great hair. So it's obviously was not a bad one. But let me pick up on that last point then, because that's really interesting. That, you know, about sort of preconceptions or at least what people expect the music industry, they expect it to be working. The existing label model, for instance, seems set in stone. You know, it's been like that for a very long time. It's perhaps calcified as it's grown over the years, and it is the predominant model now. So what has, you mentioned there people saying, well, obviously, if someone had thought of this before, they would have done it. What's changed that allows you to challenge that and offer this alternative?
Absolutely. I mean, same thing with Veeps. Like, I just, I've always had this bone in my body where I'm just like, I'm like, okay, fine. Well, 2% of startups succeed. Cool. I'm going to be the 2%. Like, I cannot take no for an answer, which, you know, as a child wasn't helpful. I was always in timeout. But like growing up, I'm like, no, okay, fine. I will show you that this will work. And it's two things. It's A, like, I mean, I think people have amazing ideas all the time, but it comes to the execution, right? And I think if you think you have a really good idea in terms of something that's going to shift this industry, get started. And look, when we started with Veeps or Versewire, the amount of changes we had to make to get it to where it is right now, that's 100% normal. Try something, watch the tape back, pivot. Try it, pivot, and get it to a point that makes sense for all parties. And I think people think that they have to have everything all at once in order for something to succeed. I think people, and I use Uber as an example because it's the best one. I'm like, Uber started as a black car private like riding company. You know what I mean? Like it didn't get like if they started with this massive idea, like it would have just been it would have been hard for people to grasp and hard for people to jump on because it's so left field from what they're thinking of, you know? And I also just think that when, you know, if someone's saying that, okay, if this would have worked, someone would have done it already, that's entirely false. I do think people have thought of it. I just don't think people have maybe executed the right way with the right people and pivoted along the way as they're watching, for example, their case study role. I think it just takes a lot of determination, and this is the future. And I'm honored that I can say that my team is leading it.
Do you think that there's been a shift in, you mentioned before that, you know, it's a fact now that fans are aware of ownership around masters. They know what masters are. I mean, this is a huge change from 10 years ago even. 100%. So do you think that there has been a shift in understanding as in a more general sense, the industry has moved towards a streaming model and social media has kicked in and all this stuff. Do you think that has allowed you to make this change as well, that artists are saying, well, actually, I don't want to go down this old existing route. I want to try something different. Is that been a part of that as well?
Absolutely. 100%. Timing is everything. If I came to you with this idea 10 years ago, wouldn't have worked. No way. Because artists weren't taking the stand that they are right now. Artists weren't, making rapid changes and educating their fans on what the business model is. Mm-hmm. The amount of comments we get on our socials, like the VerseWire socials, are mostly from fans, believe it or not. They're like, this is so cool. This is what Swift is talking about, or this is what this artist is talking about. And we're like, yeah, like they get it. And, you know, that's a huge shout out to artists that are, you know, putting their foot down and making those changes, but also social media. And that's how it's getting out there. And like I said, timing is everything. And the same goes for my last company. Same goes for this current company. It's all about just understanding, like, there's going to be opportunities for growth and changes in every business. Don't be afraid to be the one that makes it. Don't. Do it. And really believe you're going to win, because I swear to you, the universe falls in love with a stubborn heart. Just do it.
Right. What are artists saying to you then? Like, you've given us a sort of very coherent hard sell here about why it's so good. But what are they saying is the reason that they went with you and not the traditional model?
Of course. Here's the thing. I generally do believe that everyone is doing their best in a sense if they're trying to provide the best solution, but this industry is difficult. And I'll tell you why. The revenue models are constantly changing. We went from physical sales were super important. Now we're in streaming. And then is like, what's going on with radio? Is that still something we factor in? Okay, you do with this artist, maybe not with this artist. And it's constantly shifting. And I truly don't believe anyone's a bad guy here. Okay. I think everyone's just trying to adapt to this ever-changing industry that is, and we're following how people consume. I think one of the main reasons why an artist would choose us over a traditional model is because the traditional model has been done over and over and over again for quite some time. And it's just proven to be the results are like just out there. You can see it. You can see, you hear people about like an emerging artist got signed with a major and this is their story. Or, okay, you're an established artist and maybe you're not Ed Sheeran or Cardi B, but you still sell at the Hollywood Bowl, but you're not getting the same level of attention. You're being really underserviced because you're not a current hot artist, even though you're a massive artist. Mm. And I think a lot of these artists have been through the ringer and want to try something completely different. And, you know, if I were to show you my contract, there's nothing you could poke a hole at. Because these contracts were literally, we didn't base them off of everything. My lawyer, I mean, he wanted to kill me, but like we started from scratch. And what I say to you is exactly what you see on the contract. It's something that's different, but it's something that's working. And I think that, you know, you have to be a little bit forward thinking to give this a go. But when I show them the case study, when I show them projections, when I show them the team behind the magic of VerseWire, because it's not just me, I just talk a lot here. But at the company, everyone's a 15 plus, you know, year veteran. And when they see all that, and they get that like right off the bat, it's not something that they have to work towards. They speak to their A&R once and never again. That gives them confidence. That gives them confidence that if I'm honored enough to be able to work on your business with you, we're going to take good care of it.
So obviously transparency is key here from what you're saying. And you were saying that, you know, initially you were looking just at the master side of things, but mm-hmm. you've also just announced a publishing arm in collaboration with Cobalt.
Yes.
So how does that factor in, and how is that different? How is that model different?
So we are keeping those silos of the business separate. It's like the, you know, VC label services side and the pub side, because again, my lawyer would kill me if I made him draft a contract for all of that. Also, huge shout out to Cobalt. I'm very honored to be working with them. They're dear, dear friends of mine. And when I called up Cobalt, they were like, it wasn't even like a, let us think about this. It was like a, yeah, let's go. So I opened that side of the business up because, oftentimes artists don't, on the pub side of things, there's really no complaint about the advance or the money. The complaint is that they don't feel like they're getting writing sessions. They don't feel like they're getting introduced with producers. They want to be put in the rooms with like people that can elevate their music, or they can elevate someone else's music. And I was already doing that. My team and I were already doing that. So we're like, let's just do that for more artists. And that birthed the VerseWire publishing arm.
Right. So in terms of the actual model itself, it's sort of more traditional publishing model, but your focus is on delivering that sort of hands-on attention to the artists that you bring in.
Exactly. Because the frustration was never the deal. The frustration was the lack of support. So I'm like, again, it's like, what's the problem and what's my solution?
We've talked a bit about scale. And one of the sort of you're going to experiment with as you grow is maintaining that level of hands-on approach with these artists as the business scales, right? So what are your growth targets in the next 5 years? That can be in terms of artists signed or money made or whatever you want.
No, for sure. I think what we have collectively decided as a team is, in order for me to provide the same level of service, because again, like even with my last company, they're currently at about 3,000 clients. We didn't start that way. You know, we started small, and I made sure that my team knew the level of service that we were trying to handle with the artists. And once they were good, then, you know, we hired under them and hired under them, you know, and that's what we're going to do here. Like, as we grow, I just want to make sure that before, you know, we onboard the next artist, the person that's going to be, for example, project managing them is going to be able to, like, you know, replicate what our existing project manager is doing, because that's our goal with the company. Mm-hmm. And also with our A&Rs in this business are Mark Hoppus and Pete Wentz. And, it's incredible that our artists get feedback about their music, about their goals, from people that they respect so much, people that have done it. And the goal in terms of signings, I think we're going to sign about like 5 per year, and we'll go from there. Maybe that'll spike all of a sudden when we have a ton of offers and we feel like we can handle it. And then I'll have to, you know, onboard the right people to make sure they're, you know, because what I don't want to do is I don't want to get to a place where we're doing so well and we signed a ton of artists, and then I'm not able to give them the service that I've been preaching, take care of them the way that I've been preaching. It's necessary. And so 5 per year, and we're going to go from there. It's not really... I don't really necessarily have revenue targets as of now, because again, this industry is just ever changing, and we'll take it one foot in front of the other. But the goal is to take care of as many artists as possible. If that means we stick in the same genre, if that means we expand additional genres, it just all has to be done strategically.
And I guess the winds are in your favor at the moment in terms of the type of music, in that there is a resurgence.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, this is good timing again, isn't it?
100%. I mean, there's a huge rock resurgence, which I'm not exactly mad at. That is my favorite genre. but like, I mean, here's the thing. Like, if we have other genres that are coming our way and it just makes sense for us to take them on, I'm going to make sure that they're taken care of with the right people that understand that genre as well. It's not a copy and paste. Someone that understands country may not understand like punk pop, like period. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but like, it's, you just got to make sure that every client you take on is taken care of. And that's what we do.
Okay. You've called this the future of music. So do you foresee, other people operating in this way? You say you've identified, I'm not going to call it a weakness, but you've identified a place where you can make some ground gains compared to the traditional label model. You're particularly focusing in this pop punk area at the moment. But do you foresee other people going, well, actually, I think I can do that too, and we can. Will there be more people operating this way, do you think?
Of course, and guess what? I encourage it, because that just goes to show you that we're right. Like, you know, Postmates came out, then Uber Eats came out, then DoorDash came out, Uber came out, then Lyft came out, or the other way around. It's, you know, with Veeps, then Moment House came out, then Mandolin came out, then Sessions came out, then NoCat. It just goes to show you that there is a need in the marketplace for something like this. And what I always say is, don't be scared of competition. That just means that you're on the right track, and do your best. Do your best and keep doing what you're doing, because also, you can take my idea and run with it, but it's all about the execution. And that's why, like, literally, like, when in the early phases of both my businesses, they're like, well, aren't you scared someone's going to take your idea? I'm like, go for it. Like, you don't have my team. Like, it's all in the execution, the ability to pivot as you go along. So I would love it if people took this model and tried it themselves. It just means that there really is a need, and I want this to be the standard, and we're just leading it. We're not going to be the only ones. That's it.
Okay. My final question Well, I think I have a sort of feeling which way you're going to go with it. But my final question is, if you could only listen to one piece of music for the rest of your life, what would it be? I'm predicting a genre, but I don't know what you'll say.
Wait, so like an album or a single song?
Either or both.
Okay. Oh my God. Okay. This is hard. All right. An album, I would have to say, big shout out to Blink and Mark, Enema State by Blink. That's one of my favorite albums of all time. And a single song. Oh my God, that's so hard. Okay, I'm going to give this to my buddy Rob Thomas. It's Someday.
Okay.
If you haven't listened, that's one of my favorite songs ever, and it's such a beautiful one. It's so beautiful. I mean, it's just about like you're going to make it someday. And I used to listen to that when I was in my very early teens, where I was just like, okay, like, you know, I'm going to make it someday. And
yeah, that's a very coherent message you've tied in there. I appreciate the holistic approach you've taken.
Yeah, and I don't think I made it, but, you know, quote unquote, but it's, I'm very happy and proud of, how this is all kind of unrolled. And it's just about believing. And, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's just, don't be afraid to fail. Just do it. Just do it. You're going to win. If you really believe you're going to win. Period.
Right. Well, thanks for that. I will put links to those, the album and the song beneath the podcast. I'll also put some links to VerseWire, and they can check that out. And I'm sure you'll be inundated with people asking you to listen to their music. So you're very welcome.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Sherry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, there we go. Thank you again to Sherry for joining us. There are some links below this podcast to VerseWire, Sherry, and various other things for you to check out. And if you found that useful, please share that interview on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, of course, I would love to hear from you. You can email me on Joe, J-O-E, at musically.com. We also have, did you know, a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up bits and pieces of the best analysis, news, marketing insight, and skills from across Music Ally's broad range of services. So sign up and you will become a better person. That's a guarantee. Links are in the description as well. So that's it. Thank you for listening. I've been Joe Sparrow. You've been you. And until next time, farewell.